Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
In countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate you being here. We'll try and have an entertaining and informative show for you today, and of course we invite you to join the program as well, and we hope you will. And you may do so by calling us toll free at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And if you're one of those lucky folks that have one of those calling plans that you can call all you want to for nothing, why, use your plan, save us a few minutes, and call us at 941-876-6896. Either way, we'll be most happy to entertain your calls today. So much going on in the news, and yet such a down time, I guess, in a lot of ways. As you've noticed, probably a lot of the famous talking heads on TV have taken their vacations in the past week or two. A lot of Americans are on vacation, probably not driving very far this year, but working out in the yard or out at the pool or whatever it is they normally do. So this is the time of year when the doldrums kind of set in, even in an election year, when people aren't paying quite as much attention to the political scene as normal or the world scene, and they're trying to enjoy a vacation or working too many hours or whatever. But this is the time of year, even in an election year, when things kind of calm down and everybody's a little bit bored with how long this thing has run on now. Imagine how it's going to get in the future. We've had, a good 14 months, something like that, of this election season already. Somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe not quite that much, but what will it be in the future? It's like the Christmas lights, you know what I mean, that they put out in the hardware store. They put them out earlier every year. Will we be starting the elections earlier in every election cycle? Will it get to be that the day after your election, you go out and start making electioneering speeches? I mean, they start raising money the day after, so why not start electioneering right afterwards. I don't know. Just seemed like it's so long. And so, due to that fact, the dynamics of the whole situation are that people are a little bit bored right now. And it's going to be until we get to the conventions that things get stirred back up again, unless there's some sort of big news. And, of course, not necessarily political. Well, politics is mixed in with it for sure. But it all depends, a lot of this depends right now, whether or not we actually do make an attack upon the nation of Iran. And it's looking more and more every day to me like that is exactly what we will do. And we'll be talking about that and many other topics here today. But, you know, it's boring. You know it's worn down to everybody's nerve endings with this whole thing by now when the big news is, to most people, A-Rod's getting a divorce. I don't know. I quit paying attention to pro sports a few years back, and I've told you that story when my favorite NFL team, the Cleveland Browns, moved out of town. I thought, to hell with it. If that's the way pro fans and pro teams are going to treat their fans, they can count me out. And I really haven't paid any attention to pro sports in a long, long time. I look at the baseball standings now and then. I look at the NBA standings now and then. Never was interested in hockey because where I live, we didn't have any hockey teams at that time. And I don't know. Pro football has just become a bore, and baseball's a bore. And, so A-Rod and his divorce doesn't mean squat to me. I see on TV last night, passed it over, that A-Rod, and what is it he makes? $28 million a year, they said, just off his baseball contract. Isn't that a sad testament to where we are in this country? Baseball player making $28 million a year, and his divorce is in the news, and he's supposedly seeing Madonna. I mean, are we in trouble or what when that's the top news? And what's this kid, this Spears kid, the sister of the Britney Spears? She had her baby. She's an unwed mother. She sold the pictures of the baby to some magazine, making a fortune off of that. Isn't that another great testament to where we are in this country, that Americans give a damn about news like that? Fascinates me. Those shows that they have, what are they called? Inside Edition and Extra, all about the lives of celebrities. I couldn't give a rat's patoot about any one of the people on that. Maybe I must be the exception. I must be, because those shows are very, very popular. So I know I'm the weirdo in the gang. I'm not accusing anybody else of being a weirdo. It's me. But I don't get it. I've never got it. And I don't think I ever will. But that's life. I have noticed here lately, and before I get started on the little talk I wanted to give that I wanted to ask you about, if you've seen the same thing around. Are you seeing any resistance with the people that you know that are Democrats? Are you seeing much resistance to Barack Obama? I made my feelings known from the get-go that whichever Democratic nominee candidate made it, that I was going to back them. I said that when we had 8 or 10 of them. I didn't care. I mean, I had a favorite, of course, but I did make my intentions known that I was going to vote for whichever one of them won the primary. And it's debatable on who really won the primary, but anyway, Barack Obama is going to be the nominee, and I will vote for him, and I have my support behind him. Not that I like everything he has done, because I do not, but I guess that's close as I'm going to get. Those are the choices I have right now. We have to consider what the choices are. I could stay home, like some people have threatened to do, but I would be giving up my rights as a citizen to even talk about politics if I didn't go cast my vote. And that's how I feel about that. If anybody's so bitter that they're going to stay home and not vote at all as some sort of a protest against who won the primary, then I'm sorry, you've lost your right to participate in the process. You've lost your right to bitch and moan and carry on if things happen that you don't like. That's my opinion. But have you heard resistance against Barack Obama from any Democrats that you know? Just today, I heard from someone that said, well, friend told me that someone had been a friend of theirs had been a Democrat all their lives and was asked if they're going to vote for Barack Obama, and they said, no, hell no, I would never vote for a black man for president. It's coming from a white guy from the old school. I'd never vote for Barack Obama for president because he's a black man. And when asked why you wouldn't vote for a black man for president, he said, you know, they'll probably open up the prison doors and let all the convicts out, let all their brothers out, and then what kind of trouble are we going to have? And I hear something like that, and I go, are you living on the same planet with the rest of us? Are you still a caveman? Do you still grab women by their hair and drag them in and out of your cave? Do you carry that club? Do you eat raw meat? I hear things like that, and I wonder, my God, there are people with an attitude like that actually voting? There's people like that that in many aspects of their life are perfectly normal and natural, and then they come up with something like that out of their mouths? We humans are hard to figure sometime. Hard to figure sometime. I don't get it. But that's what we're running into. And if that's the way it is, why, go vote for somebody else or do what you got to do, but don't discuss politics or humanity with me, because you don't really deserve to with an attitude like that. You don't know the real story. You don't understand humanity. You don't understand decency, if you would say that. It just comes from that old school of thought, and it's too bad. Too bad. I'm wondering how many of you, I live in an area where motorsports are very popular, and particularly boating. This is just boating heaven here in Southwest Florida. There are just marinas everywhere, up and down the coast and, all around Florida. Marinas everywhere, and on the weekends here in Florida, particularly on the weekends, on Saturday morning, you know, the guys that work Monday through Friday, they're out real early towing their fishing boats, their pleasure boats up and down the road. I'm used to seeing hundreds of cars towing boats on the weekend. And I'm not seeing that anymore. And yes, there are a few. But boat traffic out on, being towed out here way off. And from what I hear from the local marinas, traffic there is off really a great deal as well because of the gasoline prices. Towing the boat there, running the boat, boats take a lot of gas. And so boating is way off, therefore boat dealers aren't selling as many boats, boat motor companies aren't selling as many motors, laying people off. And I hear that NASCAR, read a big article about this today, NASCAR is suffering too because many of the fans can't afford the gasoline to travel to the race and camp out for the weekend like they always did. Those folks have been the backbone of NASCAR for a very, very many years. And they can't afford to do it, so a lot of folks are staying home from the NASCAR races because they can't afford the gasoline to go. And you can bet, of course, that those who can no longer afford the luxury of participating in their favorite motorsport activities will be all in favor of the Republican drill, drill, drill mantra. Let's drill. It's being screamed from the mountaintops right now. And that noise is going to grow a lot louder before it gets over with. And a significant number of Americans really do believe, and they do, I hear from them, that we can drill our way out of this mess. And the facts of the matter tell an infinitely different story than that. If people would only read all of the facts, and not just what certain politicians are saying, or not just what big oil is saying, or not just what people, the environmentalists are saying, let me include them in on that as well. But most experts say that if we're able to extract every drop of oil under the U.S. soil and under U.S. territory on the shelves in the Gulf offshore, it won't make a dent in the world market. Maybe 2%. And I, yes, the world market. We're no longer going to be able to dictate to the world who gets the energy sources and who doesn't. That's just the way it is. And the sooner the American people understand that, the better off we're all going to be. Unless, of course, we do it by using our military might and conquering the oil-producing nations, and we've already had a taste of doing that. We already know what that might be. But apparently that is the plan. At least that's the plan of the current crop of neocons that we have in control of this country at the moment. And it just confounds me. One would think that a lame duck president, and for this, I gotta give Bush credit. I vastly underestimated him. I thought he really might act like a lame duck president. He has not. He has pushed ahead with his ill-devised plans. And pushes and pushes with him. And you would think that a lame duck president who will be leaving office in just a few short months would back off a bit and let it rest for a while. But no. Bush and Cheney, and I believe from everything I hear from Washington that it's primarily Cheney, I believe they're pushing onward with their plan to conquer and to subjugate the entire oil-producing area of the Middle East. I believe that is the plan. They've shown every evidence that that is the plan. That's the course they're on. And, of course, some of our military effort is to show our little buddies in Israel that we're at their side no matter what the circumstances as well. That's always a consideration in the Middle East. But the American public doesn't seem to give a damn what the administration is doing right now. They really don't seem. There's no hue and cry from the American public that, oh my God, we can't go into Iran. Let's quit these silly games we're playing with Iran. We can't even consider another war. We've got an unfinished mess in Iraq. We've got an ever-growing problem in Afghanistan, and they're picking a fight with Iran, which would be another terrible, terrible mess, far worse than what we're involved in already. But really, the American public really doesn't seem to give a damn. The public's concerned only with their pocketbooks right now, and the military personnel who are dying, be damned, they don't care. Oh, yes, you'll hear somebody, oh, God bless our troops and all that. But the people in the United States right now are thinking about their billfolds and their pocketbooks first and foremost. And to a certain extent, I understand that. Because the war isn't right outside the front door, and the high price of groceries in your empty gas tank is. But still, we're involved in these horrible confrontations in the Middle East, and the public just letting it slide. And Americans have no real intention of changing their energy habits. You see that every day. You know, I still see the other day I stopped at a Taco Bell not far from here, and right next door was a huge Hummer dealer. How can people buy those things today? I mean, I know people have the money to buy them, but how can anybody with any sort of consciousness toward the trials and tribulations of the average American and the price of gasoline and our dwindling resources, how can anybody go out and buy one of those things? I mean, I know this is America and you can buy anything you want to, but how could you in good conscience buy a vehicle like that right now? So, most people, for all intents and purposes, don't have any intentions of changing their energy habits. I see people scrimping and saving and all that, but they're still out running those cars. It's like we've got an attitude here, and it's going to let's continue to waste as much energy resources as we can, as long as we can drive our gas-guzzling cars and drive to the mall. Screw the war, as long as we can have cheap gas. Let's drill, drill, drill. That'll be the end of our problems. Just drill, and it'll all be over with, and gas will go back to $1.39 a gallon, and we'll live happily ever after, at least till we're dead, and to hell with whatever happens after that. Our kids will fend for themselves. That's the attitude we have here right now. Well, unless you've got one foot in the grave already, unless you're that age, you're long in the tooth and all that, I've got news for you, Sparky. It ain't going to be that way. Not in the near future or in the distant future as well. Things are going to change regarding oil. The lifestyle in this country is going to drastically change because of energy and energy resources. We are going to be priced out of the market no matter how much drilling we do. You can take the most optimistic drilling forecast that you can find, and they talk about billions of barrels here. You start talking about the fact that we're importing 20 million barrels of oil a day. 20 million barrels a day. 5 days is 100 million. 50 days, 50 days, folks, of imported oil is 1 billion barrels. Okay? 50 days per billion. We're talking about, they're talking about finding 18 billion barrels of oil. I think it's in the Alaskan Wildlife Preserve. Okay, that'd be 900 days worth. Is that right? 50? Yeah. Big deal. Big deal. Not even 3 years worth of imported oil. And that's the vast resource that they're talking about. I just wish people would sit down and do the math. If you add up all the reserves that they think they might be able to find in this country in their most optimistic view, it's not enough to make a tiny dent. I mean, it'll help for a little while. But drilling is not going to have any impact on the price of oil whatsoever. Nor will it prevent the inevitable from happening. We're going to run out of the stuff. And before we do, there's going to be hell to pay as long as our government and the United States public stick their heads in the sand and pretend it isn't going to happen. It is going to happen, and the sooner everybody realizes that, the better off we're going to be. We can start planning for the future instead of thinking we're going to go back to the past and have cheap gas again, because we're not. America needs to get that straight. We will never have cheap gas again. I don't care if you drill in every square yard of the entire planet. Life is going to change. You know, for one thing, our economy's in the crapper. We're hemorrhaging money. We're hemorrhaging jobs. And there's not a happy ending in sight for either one of those right now. So no matter how much oil is drilled and found in the United States, who do you think's going to be able to afford it? Do you really believe that our oh-so-benevolent big oil companies will discover and produce enough oil to keep us going and then only sell it in America? If you believe that, I could sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. If you believe that the big oil companies are going to find oil in the Gulf or offshore and sell it only in America, then you've lost your mind, because other nations will outbid us for it. And whichever company bids the most, the big oil companies are going to sell it to them, whether they're Americans or not. And you know, you should know by now, who's going to have the most money to buy that oil from the big oil companies. It's not going to be us. It's not going to be us. The strength of the dollar is falling drastically, and you think we'll be able to outbid other nations for the oil? They're already predicting by 2035 China will be the number one economic power in the world, and you think we'll be able to outbid them for the oil? And so if we can't outbid people for the oil, that leaves only one way to get it. And that's what I mentioned before, by conquering the Middle East, by conquering Venezuela, and any other oil-producing countries who can help satisfy our addiction to the stuff. That's the only choice that we would have left, if we're going to continue to be addicted to oil. One of the consequences is that other nations are sitting on our exported dollars right now from this massive trade deficit. They've apparently decided to spend off those dollars rather than wait for the full-blown financial collapse of the nation issuing them, us. And it's become apparent that they're spending those dollars on oil, the primary resource of any industrial economy. And they're prepared to outbid other bidders, including us, no matter what. Because they know the dollar is losing its value, and that those losses are probably going to accelerate over time, and what else would they spend them on? I think this is behind the rising price of oil more than anything else. You know, the right wing's yelling about the spending of the exported dollars. I mean, it's just a geological fact of life that oil is a finite resource, and it's not going to be equitably distributed around the world. Whoever can afford it's going to get it. And as I mentioned before, that leaves just the one way to get it. We're going to have to conquer the Middle East and Venezuela and anybody else that we can with our military, as long as we have the dollars to afford the military that we currently have. And will we turn into a country like the Soviet Union was, where the expenditures on the military finally sunk them? That could well happen. It's happened here. What is it, 52% of our budget goes for the military now? But to get back to my prior point, things are hitting home anyway, and they're hitting hard. And the U.S. economy is crumbling because of the way we conduct the activities of daily life. It's insane relative to the circumstances that we're in right now. We spent 60 years or so after the war building a suburban living arrangement. Everybody wanted to get to the suburbs, and I'm not blaming anybody for that. And that's suddenly that whole way of life is entered a state of failure right now because of the travel involved and the gas and the energy resources, and all of its accessories and furnishings are failing as well. And think about this, where you live, the big housing developments far out in the suburbs are becoming useless and worthless in the face of these gasoline prices that'll never be cheap again. I heard an article on the news right before the show today that there is now more retail space in this country for rent than there is rented. Imagine that. I see that where I live. Oh, do I see it? One strip mall after another, empty. The strip malls and these office parks are following this residential real estate crash right off a cliff. And the retail tenants of all those places are hemorrhaging customers who have maxed out every one of their credit cards. The lack of business is now leading to big layoffs in this country. The airline industry is dying. And it'll probably cease to exist in its current form. And it's not going to take too long to change drastically, maybe even a couple of years, and it won't resemble what it is now. The trucking industry is dying. And when the trucking industry is in trouble, which they are deep trouble right now, that threatens the entire just-in-time distribution system of things that even people with little money to spend still need, like food, this just-in-time distribution thing that we've developed over the last couple of decades. So these conditions are not going to get a lot worse, no matter whether the banks continue to hide their problems like they have on Wall Street lately. I mean, all of it is spiraling downward toward a catastrophic collapse that could well coincide with the November election. And by then, I truly expect that quite a few banks will be toast. There's going to be more job layoffs, foreclosures. Bankruptcies will be raging all across the country. We haven't seen near the end of that yet. And the homeowners, think about this for this coming winter. The homeowners north of the Sun Belt, will just be shattered by the cost of trying to stay warm with heating oil. And, of course, all of this, or most of it anyway, will be blamed on the Republican Party. And it could even kill off the party permanently. But political parties do go out of business in American history. And, for sure, this one deserves to die. With its aggressive grab what they can for themselves attitude that they've had. It's holier-than-thou religious extremism. It's stunning inattention to financial malfeasance in areas under its direct supervision, Wall Street in particular. And its absolute gross incompetent mismanagement of the nation's strategic interest. And I honestly think I'm going to feel sorry for Barack Obama if he gets into the White House. Because he's going to have to find some sort of a gentle way to tell the truth to the people who elected him. People who will be suffering mightily by that time and who will be very sore about their losses. He'll have to tell them that the previous version of the American dream is obsolete. And the new version is going to require a whole lot more of them in the way of earnest effort. And we're going to have to get rid of this instant gratification attitude that we've had and downgrade expectations, frankly. There's a whole lot we can do to greet the new circumstances awaiting us, but one thing we can't afford to do is to put all of our efforts into keeping the current system running as it is. Reality simply will not permit it. We need to take care of our dwindling remaining resources and try and keep it going. But the next president is going to have to lead us through the awful process of cutting our losses. And so far, the debate has been how to avoid that. And that attitude just doesn't square with reality. We're going to have to face it sooner or later, and I do feel sorry for Barack Obama walking into the worst mess any president has ever walked into. One could argue that Harry Truman walked into a worse mess when Franklin Roosevelt died during the war, but the tide of the war had been turned then, and it was obvious that America and her allies were going to win the war. And the economy was booming. And did continue to boom for a long, long time after that. So I think Harry didn't have it as bad as Barack Obama's going to have it. That's assuming that Barack Obama does win the presidency, which I firmly believe he will. Well, I guess I've talked long enough here for right now. Let's hear from you. I'd love to hear from you on what I've had to say. I firmly believe that the Republicans, Republicans, or however you like to put it, the way a lot of my friends talk about these people, these neocons, I really believe they're going to make it rough on Barack Obama. They're probably in the back rooms and smoke-filled rooms of Washington right now trying to figure out what they'll do to keep him from implementing any plans he may have, what they can do to stymie any efforts that he may have to make things better. Maybe thinking of something they could impeach him with, like they did with Bill Clinton. They will come up with some way to resist any progress that Barack Obama might want to make for the good of the country. And they'll do that for the good of their political party, to save their political party, because they're going to have to save it, because, as I mentioned, I think they're in serious trouble. The fact is, both parties are in serious trouble. There's a great deal of satisfaction with the Democratic Party right now as well. A great deal of satisfaction. You've seen the latest polls, 9 to 10% popularity rating. Oh, my God. But then again, what have they done to deserve any better than that? Certainly nothing. I've heard the right-wingers, and it's pathetic, their argument, that, well, this do-nothing Democratic Congress. The Republicans have threatened now with this 60-vote rule that they have to to filibuster over 60 different bills. Over 60 bills they've threatened to filibuster. They haven't had to because the cowardly Democrats haven't made them go ahead and do it. I would have made them go ahead and filibuster every last one of them until they drop dead on the floor. But Harry Reid hasn't seemed fit to do that. He wants to continue to be able to talk to his good friends, I guess. Call them his good friends. Let's head on over to the telephone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, that didn't last long now, did it? Whoever that was, call me back. I might have pushed the wrong button there. I'm not for sure. Okay. I did. I might have pushed the wrong button. I don't think I did, though. Anyway. Barack Obama's in for a tough time of it. I don't think I'd want to be in his shoes. I think he's got a lot of guts. I think anybody that would walk into that mess right now has got a lot of guts. I don't know. But give us a call, 866-546-5254. We're going to go to a break right now, and we'll be back right after that.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true. It's true.
Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. We invited you to call, and I see some of you are calling, so let's go to the phone board right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Sandra.
Hi, Sandra.
Are you on air?
Yes.
Oh, I wasn't listening to the show too clearly, I guess. Listen, I just wanted to reach out because I'm really sort of a bit in a state of shock, so... This FISA bill just passed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Obama voted for it. But what I find really kind of funny is, you know, Hillary voted against the whole mess.
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh. It's not funny, but it's just like, you know, I just wonder if you have any insights on why this has happened, because... I don't care how they spin it. I've been following it pretty closely for a long time. And this is just a serious assault on the Fourth Amendment. There's really no way around it.
It is. And it's...
And it's really problematic for me because I know everyone's like, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's not like you can vote for anybody else. And, yeah, that's true. But this has really sucked the any kind of... enthusiasm I might have had for the Obama campaign. I have to be honest with you.
Oh, I completely agree. I know exactly what you're saying. I feel the same way. You know, it's pure political calculations taking place right now. They have figured that you and me will vote that way anyway, and that if they do something to piss us off, that we'll still vote that way, and they can go ahead and try and get some of those in the middle. That's exactly where they're going with this, and isn't it sad?
Well, and it's also really quite disturbing because of how disposable they see the Bill of Rights is, really. This is how I'm viewing it in a bigger picture. It's like, okay, if they can turn a constitutional... amendment destruction into a, well, this is only an extreme left concern, you know, we're in trouble. You know what I'm saying?
I absolutely agree.
I mean, if it's been framed as if it's just only the left and the progressive and the people who, you know, really don't matter in this contest. I'm just saying how it's being framed. And it's just so outrageously wrong because if you ask any American, they're not interested in corporations having immunity. Just on the strength of that.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the issue is, nobody wants these corporations to get more of a free ride than they already do. Don't you think that's true?
I absolutely agree, but I would also interject that most Americans don't really even know what this FISA bill is all about, and as mentioned on the Senate floor today, most of the senators really don't even know the full ramifications of it because they haven't read the whole thing. It's criminal.
Yeah, no, I know. The 70 of the members don't. And it's sort of like, well, Obama's not on any of those committees, so does he even know? You see what I'm saying?
I would hope as a presidential candidate he'd be well advised on the issue, but...
Who knows? I mean, and the thing is, it's just his position is so blatantly craven, I can't even believe it, you know? I mean, I was sort of... I'm never really sort of sucked in completely by this cult of personality because... Let's be honest, you know, I'm into a country of laws, you know what I mean? So I look at it, you know, with a jaundiced view, but, you know, I was fairly moved by his rhetoric just along with everybody else, but I am in a completely bowled over by how totally, utterly he changed his position on this like no other, and he's just pressing forth as if it's the same business as usual, you know?
Well... When did we ever hear the term rule of law any more than during the Clinton impeachment?
Well, that's why I say it with almost a bit of sarcasm.
Yes.
It makes me sick that it was reduced to that, and, you know, I'm left to use the term, as far as I'm concerned, in what it originally means, not in some sort of...
The rule of law means that nobody, including the President of the United States, is above the law. That's how they used it on Bill Clinton in a nefarious manner.
Right.
And here we have a guy who openly and wantonly committed felonies. I don't think there's any question about that. And yet we've got the guy that wants to be his successor, John McCain, going around the company and says, well, let's not look back. Let's look forward. You know, in any criminal trial or indictment or anything, you must look back upon what happened. And he's not the slightest bit interested in looking back. Let's just all those Republicans. Let's just move on. Let's just move on. It's not a big deal. Let's just move on.
Well, see, what about this this whole notion of this? You can't just make new laws to cover crime. Isn't that stated in the Constitution?
Well, sure it is, and they object to the way the right wingers object to judges ruling from the bench making law. They're making law. It's driving me crazy the duplicity they use in this whole matter.
Well, and also just a court the other day out west said that these lawsuits have standing. So
yes.
With this passage, they are completely circumventing the law in a way that Congress is able to, but I've never seen them done in such a venal manner. This is just an outrage, and I'm, barely able to contain myself with the rage I'm feeling. And it's directed at just the whole Washington establishment at this point, because it's just showing just how little, absolutely little, they give a concern about the people.
No.
And, I'm just sort of appalled by the whole thing. And, I'm seriously sort of reassessing what options I do have here in November,
Yeah, the thing is, what options do you have? we are no longer a government of the people. We do not matter. 535 legislators, and only a portion of those are running this country, and they don't give a damn what we think. That became very obvious today.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I'm, that's sort of the only thing I can, take away from it. And I suppose, the process will go on as if this little hiccup hasn't happened.
And isn't it something that, once again, we have a vote, to my knowledge on the vote, not a single Republican strayed from the reservation on the vote. Not a single one.
For Specter, on some of his amendments, but that was just on the amendment, I don't think, I think when the bill passed, I'm pretty sure he probably voted.
Well, he said he would. I heard him say, was it yesterday or this morning, said, I don't like this bill, and I wrote it down what he said, but I'll stomach it.
Shut up. I mean, I'm not, you see, this is the thing. How dare they frame what they're doing as the less of two evils? There is save the Fourth Amendment, and then there's eviscerated. There isn't any middle ground here, from what I can tell, and I'm not just going by people's commentary. I went and read this new bill as best as I could, and it's a mess. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they have, most of them have no idea what's in it or how it's framed. They just don't, and I believe guys like Specter are trying to create some middle ground. Now they'll say, well, yes, I voted for it, but I was really against it, and I said so before I voted. I said I didn't like it, but I had to vote for it.
But, I mean, the thing is, though, I don't know, I'm assuming you realize it, but it really literally means that the government now can spy on our communications without warrants. I mean, it's that strong. It's not, there is no mediation between the government doing it or not, and it's on the idea that they know best.
And lest anybody doubt that they would use it, and in what way they would use this, not for terrorism's sake, but look at the Siegelman case down in Alabama. It's come to light that was almost definitely a political persecution of this man, of a Democrat, and who knows what illegal information they got on him. They can do that to any of us now, any of us. If they want to, if they want to persecute you or me or anybody that, they don't agree with politically, they can do it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and you know, it's just sort of the all of it is expanding into the what I call the safe middle class white world. These people are now going to start being harassed by the powers that be that poor and minority people have dealt with since the beginning of this country. But now I see it moving into other realms where it's never touched before. And, you know, I think these people, because they don't, they've never been exposed to stuff like this, they don't know what the hell is coming. I'm sorry.
That's exactly right. And you know, that we would trust people. You know, this Karl Rove deal and this Siegelman, people would never dream that this would happen. But the Bush administration for how many years got away with a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And finally, they get involved in the Siegelman case. I mean, it's clearly illegal. The FISA thing is clearly illegal, but these people will take whatever the people will tolerate, and we've tolerated the whole thing and let them do it.
Yeah, well, no, and that's the thing I'm getting back to is that, you know, you rest on these sort of assumptions that, oh, no, the government will only go so far. Like, oh, no, we wouldn't invade a nation just because. You see what I'm saying?
Now, there was some people that spoke a language over in the middle of Europe, a different language than us in the middle of Europe, that thought the same thing back in the late 1920s and early 1930s. That thought,
Stop. Oh, my God. I know, and it's just, I don't want to go there, and it could be because of the book that I'm reading right now. It's called The Origins of Totalitarianism by Hannah Arendt.
You don't want to go there, but sometimes you're shoved over there.
Well, it's just sort of freaking me out. I think I might need to stop reading that right now because it's all like this sort of confluence of madness that seems to be picking up. But anyway, I just, you know, I don't know. I just needed to touch base with someone who might, you know, see it for what it is.
Well, Sandra, let me ask you a question. I've heard this, and I'll bet you've heard it too. How many people have you talked to on the other side of the political spectrum that have said, well, hey, if you don't have anything to hide, you don't have anything to worry about?
Well, yeah, that seems to be the answer back to all this sort of, and I've heard not people, yeah, okay, they were sort of conservative who said this, you're right, but, you know, that kind of stuff just leaves you dumbfounded. I mean, how do you respond to comments?
Yeah, here you are, pal. I'll give you all of my personal, intimate information, anything you want. Here, you just take it, and you can know everything there is to know. But I don't have anything to hide. My God, I can't imagine doing that. I just can't. Oh, well, we're going to do it. We are doing it.
Okay, well, listen, you know, you have a good day.
Sandra, thanks for calling. Always good to talk to you. Bye now. Have you heard that statement? How many of you heard that statement? Raise your hands. One, two, three. Yeah, quite a few of you. Yes. If you don't have anything to worry about, anything to hide, you have nothing to worry about. Huh? Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, this is Terry Fort Myers.
Pardon me?
Oh,
you'll have to turn down your sound there in the background.
Sorry. Are we live?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the one thing that I wanted to point out was this.
Yeah.
Is that regardless of whether FISA was voted into, allegedly a law now, or whether it wasn't, it has not withstood the test of the Supreme Court, the test of appeal. The Patriot Act has not withstood one challenge. It's been defeated on every single challenge that has ever been, every lawsuit that has ever been brought against it. It's been defeated in the courts. And this, there's no doubt in my mind it will be also. However, you know, there's a lot of nasty stuff that's going to go on prior to that.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that they're going to stop. I mean, look what they, you know, look at what they've been doing for 7 years, 7.5 years.
Sure.
But it's just unbelievable.
Do you have any feelings as to whether or not Obama will, after he gets in, if he gets in, that he'll be able to really and truly, according to his word, work on stripping out the immunity? You know, he has made a statement like that, that
I think that that's all just propaganda, because he would have to go in and...
It'd be a massive effort.
Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think he can do that.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking either couldn't or wouldn't.
I mean, when you look at what's going on in Congress, okay,
yeah.
When you have a brand new Speaker of the House, brand new, first words out of her mouth almost, after swearing in, taking an oath to uphold the Constitution, the first words out of her mouth, impeachment's off the table.
Mm-hmm.
That is a blatant violation of her oath. That is a predetermined, what would you call it, decision? However you want to look at it, whatever word you want to call it. She has already been judged, jury, already seen the information, whatever, and made a decision.
Right.
Well, first of all, it's not up to her.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, when I first heard that, I was outraged.
Yeah.
I said, here's these people who claim to be for us, and then they put some clown in there, and I don't care if it's a male or female, some clown in there who blatantly, verbally, and publicly violates her oath of office the very first thing she does.
You're exactly right. That was literally the first thing.
If we get these people on the other side of the fence over here that are coming at us like, you know, like we're all the terrorists, and then these other people that are supposed to be protecting us going, yeah, that's okay. Oh, but we got issues.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I sure do.
So I don't want to take up any more of your time. But
I'm pretty disturbed over it, and I can tell you are as well. But I'm not shocked. I think we knew how the vote was going to go. But I thought maybe, just maybe, over the 4th of July, a lot of senators would go home and hear from their constituency and change their minds. But they were not to be changed. I doubt a single one was changed. Terry, thanks for calling. Always good to hear from you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye now. Yeah, I really did. I'm a starry-eyed optimist in that regard. I really thought they would go home, and I thought there would be the hue and cry from the public and say, "Hey, Mr. Senator, how about cooling it on this thing? How about let's put this off?" Harry Reid could have put it off. But they would have us believe that we are so threatened. So threatened by these terrorists, this small band of terrorists around the world, that we're just in dire straits, and we've got to push this through. And so, who was it? Ben Franklin, or I forget who said it. For the sake of a little safety, we'll give up our liberty. It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And I think given the chance to properly explain it to all of the American people, those who would listen and sort out the fact from fiction, I think it would be overwhelming a vote against this. I'm absolutely convinced of that. If the people in this country knew the entire story, I think that's the way it would be. But they don't. And once again, here we had something critical to our rights passed, taking away some of our rights to privacy, and the American public sits in the dark about it by and large. All they have is a political opinion, whether or not they're a Democrat or a Republican. Oh, my God. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back after the news.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Healthcare for America Now Coalition Tuesday launched a $40 million national campaign demanding affordable, quality health care for all. The coalition includes unions, doctors, nurses, community groups, small businesses, and others united to achieve health care reform in 2009. The campaign will spend at least $25 million on paid media advertising and will have 100 organizers in 45 states pushing for health care reform. The campaign was launched Tuesday with events in 44 cities, including 36 state capitals. The coalition says that real health care reform must include affordability, choice of a private or public plan, must cover everybody, and must also have a national standard for health benefits that covers what people really need. California has a new law requiring mortgage lenders to contact buyers before starting a foreclosure process. It gives homeowners some advance warning and some time to try to modify bad loans before losing their homes. The California Labor Federation says the new law provides some immediate protection for those who need it, but is just a first step in banning the abusive lending practices that created the mortgage and home foreclosure crisis. California's governor signed that bill on Tuesday. Workers at a paper mill in Pennsylvania are on the picket lines. Jesse Russell reports.
More than 400 workers at the Appleton Paper Mill in Roaring Spring, Pennsylvania, are embroiled in a contract dispute over health care and retirement. The workers are represented by the United Steelworkers, and the union has filed unfair labor practice allegations against the company with the National Labor Relations Board. The union is eager to restart negotiations, but the company has since refused to come back to the table. Currently, a strike is not planned, but as each day passes and the table remains empty, that option becomes a greater possibility. The workers hit the picket lines on Tuesday when they received word that a company official would be visiting the mill. The workers have been in the dispute with the company since March of this year. Here is today's economic report. The second quarter of 2008 was the worst quarter for strip mall owners in 30 years. Vacancies at strip malls jumped by 0.5 percentage points to 8.2%. The number will likely grow in coming months as Starbucks moves forward with plans to shutter 600 stores by March of 2009. And Gap plans to lose 40 million square feet of retail space. More space is now available to rent in strip malls than there is space that is already rented.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You can get WIN Labor News delivered straight to your cell phone. Just call 425-527-7001. That's 425-527-7001 for WIN's Labor News on your cell phone. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get count down. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
Hey,
country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. So good to know you're riding along with us this afternoon. Happy to have you there. We've been talking about the FISA bill and the attempt at stripping the immunity out of it and all that. Just didn't work. I had somebody contact me during the break and was mentioning in an email that, the Democrats should have filibustered it. Well, that would not have worked because they would have been able to get cloture on it since the Republicans and along with their Democratic friends did have a 3/5 of the seated senators, they would have been able to evoke cloture on that. That is my understanding, anyway, if anybody tried to filibuster it. Any senator is allowed to get up and talk as long as he wants to, but they have that 3/5 rule in the Senate now, and I think the vote came out, 65 or 66, somewhere around there, so they would not have been able to stop it with a filibuster even, sadly. Once in a while, a computer just doesn't do what you want it to. Let me check something here. Just one moment. Nothing like live radio, is there? Ah, yes. In these days of wild electrical storms and so forth around here, it's hard to sometimes keep everything up to snuff in the studio. Warm in the studio today. My gosh, looking over there, it says 79 degrees on the wall. That's too warm for me. Too warm for me. We'd hope to have Professor Jonathan Turley on this afternoon, and unfortunately, he's in class right now. We couldn't work him in right now, but we did get a chance to talk to him earlier today about how he feels about the FISA challenge. Evidently, the ACLU will challenge the FISA law in court. And, hey, more power to them. I hope they do. And a lot of times people criticize the ACLU for some of the things they've done, but whether you're for the, whatever issue they're working on, they'll work for anybody. Doesn't make any difference. Do keep in mind that they even worked for Rush Limbaugh during his drug junkie days, which, from my mind, have never ended, apparently, the way he talks. And anyway, sue me, Rush. Once a drug junkie, always a drug junkie, they say. 866-546-5254. Do you think that's too rough on poor Rushy? 866-546-5254. I see John Edwards says that he will seriously consider the vice presidential nomination. Interesting. Or anything else that Barack Obama should ask him to do. Man, isn't that a statement right there? John Edwards said he'll seriously consider the VP nomination. In other words, I'll take it. I think that's what that says. Anytime a politician says, I'll consider a nominee, he's going to take it. And Dennis Kucinich, God bless him. Tomorrow, Dennis Kucinich plans to introduce a single article of impeachment against Junior Bush, to quote Dennis, for taking our nation and our troops to war based on lies. Last month, Dennis Kucinich presented 35 impeachment articles against Bush, which have been sent to the Judiciary Committee. Of course, they're still laying on the table, I know. It seems that Mr. Conyers nor anyone else is of a mind to do anything. Do you think that it would hurt the Democrats a great deal if all of a sudden articles of impeachment were filed. If people, of course, now stop and look at this for a moment. The Democrats who voted for this FISA bill and voted, in essence, what they did was to clear Bush and the telecom communications people of any illegalities. Although I have heard legal opinions which says this will keep them from civil courts, protect them from civil courts, but not from criminal courts. I don't know, not being an attorney, I don't know how that really shakes out, but doesn't this make every Democrat that voted for this complicit in breaking the law? Doesn't it? Aren't they saying when they vote for this, well, we know you broke the law. We've heard a lot of folks say you broke the law. We've heard some of the most esteemed legal minds in this country say that you broke the law. But, gosh, gee, we're going to overlook it this time. And really, I guess we're going to overlook it forevermore because we're just going to give you a good old law here that lets you keep doing it. Not only are we sanctioning the fact that you did break the law, we're allowing you to do it again and again and again. Whenever you wish, on whatever whim you wish. Oh, yes. We've given you guidelines here. The FISA law says that it has to be something to do with terrorism, but you know what? You know what? If you really, really want to get somebody, one of your political opponents, somebody that's spoken out against you, a newspaper man perhaps that's written a story you don't like, a magazine ad, somebody on TV, maybe even a poor old radio host like Guy James or somebody like that. I don't like what they said about me. I don't like it. So you call off people in the administration, if you're the president, and say, hey, take care of this guy, will you? Get him under that FISA law. Yeah, get him under that FISA law. Find an email that says, you know, and they're looking for specific words, from what I understand, that triggers the spying software that they have, certain words. And so if you write your brother-in-law an email that says you used a bug bomb to kill some ants, would that be pulled out? I know that's a silly scenario, but will that be pulled out? Do you kill and bomb? And they can go after anybody now, anybody, for any reason they want to. And they'll get away with it. And you know why they'll get away with it? Because here we had, in daylight, in broad daylight, the United States Senate passing a law that said it was okay for telecom communication companies to violate the law as long as they were ordered to violate the law or sanctioned to violate the law by the President of the United States who was breaking the law by telling them to do it. It's okay. And the American public sitting there today going, well, you know, ain't got nothing to hide, you ain't got nothing to worry about. Nah. So what's the big deal? So you think that some poor schmo in Minot, North Dakota, who happens to be an enemy of the, or Monkey Junction, North Carolina, happens to be an enemy of the Bush administration, and they go after him and they say, you know, he was doing terrorist stuff. Terrorist stuff. And the guy, the poor schmo Minot's going, no, I wasn't doing any. Never mind. He'll be put away where he'll never see the light of day again. What, called an enemy combatant or whatever the things they do to get away with just pushing somebody out of sight they don't ever want you to see again. It happens, folks, and it's happening here, and it's happening now legally in the United States of America. Well, I'm sorry that happened. Our legislators owe us an apology over that. Looking at the campaign, yes, there is a political campaign going on besides all the shenanigans taking place in the government. Democrats and Republicans alike, breaking the law or sanctioning the President of the United States to break the law. It's okay, press, go right ahead, do what you want to do. We got it. We heard the big news yesterday about Maliki from Iraq wanting to set a timetable to get the United States military out of his country, to get them out of their hair. He thinks that they can run their own country right now, and I happen to think they ought to be allowed to run their own country right now. And just to make sure, a day after the Iraqi Prime Minister said that he wanted some kind of a timeline for the eventual U.S. military withdrawal from his country, other members of the Iraqi government stepped up to repeat al-Maliki's demand. You see, all the talking heads on TV last night. Did you see them all last night? Did you see the scrambling they were doing last night? They were sent out to do their job, but I don't think they did a very good job. Well, a lot of them said, well, you know, we don't know if that's what Maliki said or not. We don't know. We're still negotiating. We're going to have to wait and see. That were the talking heads. That were the Republican operatives on TV last night and on the radio today. Well, we're not sure Maliki said it. Well, other people in his government came out and said it today. So as to make it absolutely everybody sure that that is the feeling of the government, the representatives of the people in Iraq. Now they have a democracy in Iraq, and they have a democratically elected parliament and president, prime minister, I guess he's called. So, they said they're not going to accept any memorandum of understanding that doesn't have specific dates to withdraw the U.S. forces from Iraq. And they want the U.S. troops completely out of their country 5 years from when all 18 provinces have been transferred to their control, whenever that might be. They want them out. They don't want any permanent bases there. They want them out. And here we are negotiating with these people, a sovereign nation that we're occupying. Well, you know, we really don't give a damn what you said. I know what we did say. We did say that, if you want us to leave, we'll leave. But now, since you've said it, that's a different story. And the State Department, of course, isn't commenting on any proposed timeline or any status of these negotiations regarding this agreement that they're trying to hammer out. They keep saying, well, we want to withdraw. We want to withdraw, and we will withdraw whenever the Iraqis tell us they want us out. But now they've said so, haven't they? But we have John McCain totally dismissive of Maliki's demands. Oh, yeah. He and McCain doesn't give a damn if Maliki wants us out of there. McCain is going to do what he's going to do, and to hell with what Maliki says. He says, Iraq's National Security Advisor says security pact will not be accepted without specific withdrawal dates. And McCain denies that the Maliki and al-Rubei statement have changed the situation, and McCain continues to say that we should have a long-term troop presence in Iraq. Just yesterday, McCain said, I know for a fact that a troop pullout will be dictated by the situation on the ground, as it has always been, ignoring the fact that the wishes of the Iraqi government constitute part of the situation on the ground. And then he went ahead and tried to reshape Maliki's comments, saying, we can withdraw and withdraw with honor, not according to a set timetable, and I'm confident that is what Prime Minister Maliki is talking about. Well, that is not what Maliki said. He said he wants us out, and he wants a timetable for getting us out. And here a man running for the presidency of the United States, one John Sidney McCain, is trying to reframe what Prime Minister Maliki is talking about and saying we can withdraw and withdraw with honor, not according to a set timetable. In other words, screw you, Maliki. We'll get out whenever I say we'll get out if I'm the president. And he was quoted back in April 22nd of 2004. McCain was asked about this very thing, as we mentioned yesterday. He said, well, if that scenario involves, then I think it'd be obvious that we would have to leave. Because if it was an elected government of Iraq and we've been asked to leave other places in the world, if it were an extremist government, then I think we'd have other challenges. But I don't see how we could stay when our whole emphasis and policy has been based on turning the Iraqi government over to the Iraqi people. Mr. McCain, the handwriting's on the wall, buddy. They want us out, and they do want a timeline for getting us out. Can you blame them? Can you blame the Iraqi people for wanting this occupation of their country to be over with? Let them work out their problems. We are told, oh my God, we can't leave because of the threat of Al-Qaeda. When we know, looking back on the history of the Shia and the Sunni in the country, neither of them will allow Al-Qaeda to become dominant in that country. And let's face it, with the Al-Qaeda, we're talking about a small group of people. A small group of people. In the hundreds, maybe the small thousands. And we're talking about a country of 20 million people. It's not going to happen. Al-Sadr doesn't want anything to do with it. Maliki doesn't want anything to do with it. It will not happen. But that's the excuse that our government keeps giving us. Well, we can't leave because Al-Qaeda will take over. Well, bullshit. That's simply not going to happen. And anybody that's a student of the history of that area knows damn well that's not going to be happening. And then we had John McCain criticizing Congress. I saw a clip of him last night criticizing Congress for being off for the 4th of July over the FISA bill. Should have pushed it up a week. He said, should have had this done, and now what do? They break for vacation and take a week off for the 4th of July. This coming from the man who has the worst attendance record of anybody in the United States Senate. He, John McCain, the guy who's been absent the most, criticizes the rest of the Senate for not getting this done before the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And then we have John McCain, his campaign. It's just like a situation we talked about yesterday. The lady that had the, got kicked out of the event for having the McCain equals Bush sign. Wouldn't you take that as a compliment if you were proud of your president of the United States to have somebody else, your candidate, your president candidate, compared to him? Wouldn't you take that as a compliment? I certainly would. I certainly would. Bush equals McCain? Damn right. If you're a Republican, that'd be a good thing, wouldn't it? But they took it the opposite way. Well, now, we've got another situation just like that. If you are a Republican and you voted for Junior Bush twice, you obviously love him. You obviously think he's been good for America. And you obviously think John McCain will be good for America as well. A picture of the President of the United States being hugged, passionately, I might add, passionately and with feeling hugged by John McCain. Why, isn't that something you'd want to use in your campaign? Wouldn't it to show the closeness of the two men, that they're of like mind and they have great feelings for one another? Wouldn't you want that picture in your campaign literature? If you were the candidate, hugging the President of the United States, a man from your own party, two-termer, my God, what better press could you get than that? What a better photo op than that? And yet, the McCain campaign is calling the Democrats' use of that picture, featuring McCain hugging Bush, The Republicans are calling that an attack ad. An attack ad. McCain hooked up with the press, lovingly toward one another. The sitting president of the United States and your candidate trying to succeed him, hugging him. What better photo op could you want? But no, the Republicans are calling it an attack ad. I just don't get that, do you? I just don't get that. There must be a few Republicans that are ashamed. Ashamed of Junior Bush. To be worried that someone has a sign that says Bush equals McCain would tell me that you are ashamed of the president, a man from your party. To call this ad an attack ad, a picture of McCain hugging the president of the United States, a Republican, that would mean to say to me that you are ashamed that this man is the president of the United States. Now fess up, that is what you're saying, isn't it? You are ashamed of the Bush administration. And you don't want anything to do with it. And neither does John McCain. A la that 24-second visit together on the tarmac at the airport. Where was it? In Arizona? They didn't want him to be seen in public? And how much presence do you think Junior Bush will have? A two-term president at the next Republican convention. Do you think they will show him off? They will hide him as much as they can. He will have to beg for time on the podium at the Republican convention in Minneapolis. They are that ashamed of him. And rightly so. At least many of them are showing the good judgment to be ashamed of this man and his conduct for the 7+ years that he's been in office. Won't it be an oddity? A two-term president of the United States, virtually missing from the campaign, virtually absent from the convention floor. My, won't that be a group? The people on the floor of the convention of the Republican National Committee, won't they be an excited bunch? Won't they be, oh, so happy? That's going to be a pitiful scene. Going to be a pitiful scene. Heard John McCain might be doing a Depends ad on commercial to raise money for his campaign. Yeah, John McCain doing a Depends ad, raise a little money for his campaign. Maybe hook up with Bob Dole, and two of them could do. You know what I'm saying. And of course, John McCain manages to stick his foot in his mouth about every other day. At least every other day. And he does it again. You see, we've got to kill those people in Iran. We have to kill them. Have to kill them. We've killed as many as we can in Iraq. We've got to kill those Iranians. And John McCain has an idea on how to do it.
We've learned that the exports to Iran increased by tenfold during the Bush administration. The biggest export was cigarettes. Given that
that's a way of killing them.
Yeah, that's another way of killing them. We could drop some bombs on them. That'd probably be the preferred method to Mr. McCain. Or we can kill them with cigarettes. Or we can bomb Iran. Isn't it interesting? We sent cigarettes to Iran. At least $158 million worth during the Bush administration. Probably other administrations as well. I'm not just blaming the Bush administration for that. But we've got all these problems with that country, but we sure as hell can send them cigarettes. $158 million worth during the Bush administration. More than any other products. More cigarettes to Iran than any other products. Well, well, well. And once again, if you didn't catch it, the question was from a reporter about the cigarettes, and McCain said, maybe that's a way of killing them. And his wife, Cindy, poked him in the back real quick like, hey, stupid, don't say anything. And of course, then he turned around and said to her, why, you stupid, and used the C word on him. No, I'm not sure that happened. It happened before in front of presidents, reporters. Yeah. How many of you get away with calling your wife that? And still live to tell about it or still be married, I wonder. And, of course, I didn't want to let this pass today. I read a story also about the spin that's going on. We have General Petraeus prohibiting the phrase, we're winning, in connection with Iraq. You know, the Republican military god, General Petraeus. During the Washington Post chat today, CBS News foreign correspondent Kimberly Dozier, who was severely injured from a car bombing in Iraq in 2006, said that she understands from folks in Baghdad that General Petraeus won't let folks use words like triumph or victory or say we're winning. Will Senator John McCain, who frequently claims that we're winning in Iraq, and his allies Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman, will they take Petraeus' advice? Probably not. In fact, they have not. Let's play a little clip from Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman and John McCain.
We're winning because John McCain understood Iraq better than anybody else. The surge has worked.
Now his policy is working. Iraq is succeeding.
Senator Obama refuses to acknowledge that we are winning in Iraq. He refuses. He called it spin. Is General Petraeus spinning the American people? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, obviously he thinks you are, Mr. McCain. Obviously he thinks you are. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Hello? Well, that was... All right, we're getting a call back from that. We'll try it again here in just a moment, okay? Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Mike down in Houston. How are you doing today?
Hi, Mike.
You doing all right?
Yeah.
Good. I just wanted to touch base with you on the gas prices, and I sent you an email partly on that and wanted to see what you thought about it. As far as eliminating a lot of the formulations of the gasoline only have two grades. What do you think that would
be? Well, I think eliminating the formulations would probably be a good thing. But as for the rest, there are a lot of the rest of your note about drilling us out of this problem. I think I gave enough statistics to start the show today that I think it's an impossibility, and most people in the oil business think it is as well.
Well, I wouldn't go that far saying all the people or most of the people in the oil business. My dad was in the oil business for years and years and years, and we have so much shale. We're the Saudi Arabia of coal, and we can have all that stuff up and running in 3 months. We can perf holes and
3 months.
Yeah.
Have it online and affect the price of gas?
Oh, I think it'll affect the gas price probably a lot sooner than 3 months, just simply by virtue of the rest of the world knowing that we're not going to take it anymore.
So we can just go over to those Saudis and say, hey, take that, guys. We've got this shale and we've got, they're going to laugh at us if we tell them that.
Oh, no. We don't have to tell them anything. We just start doing it. And when they know that we're doing it, that'll be enough to...
Well, Mike, let me ask you a question. If these good and benevolent oil companies extract oil from shale and they drill off the shores and they drill in the Gulf and all, are they going to sell all that oil in this country or are they going to sell it where they can get the highest price?
Well, it's going to simply be a matter of having to change some of the rules so that we do have to say it's all for here.
Oh, no, wait a minute, Mike. No, we can't interfere. That's the Republican way. We can't interfere with capitalism. We can't interfere with these poor oil guys and tell them what to do. Mike, do you think for 1 minute they wouldn't sell that oil for the highest price they can get it for?
Well, I can guarantee you one thing. If they could be drilling now here they would be at $140 a barrel. They damn sure would be.
And they've got how many million acres leased that they're not drilling in right now?
Because there's not any oil there recoverable.
Then why are they paying? Then why are they paying leases on it? Are they that stupid?
Because they're long term leases, and you know they're 4, 5, 10 year, 15 year leases, and they did go out and look at them. And there's just not enough recoverable oil to make that big of a difference. But we do know where the oil is. The technology has changed enough to where they actually don't have to drill dry holes anymore like Bush did when he was in the younger days of the oil industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know all that, guy.
Yeah, I do know all that, and I know that if we develop every bit of oil that we have in this country, it's going to amount to about 2% on the world market, and that is not going to drive down the gas prices in this country, and it's just going to allow the people with the money that we don't have to outbid us for the oil, and the oil companies will sell it to them. And if you make a law prohibiting the oil companies to sell it to them, then you're just as guilty of what you accuse me of. I said nationalize the oil company. You'd be, in essence, telling them what to do, and we can't have that, can we?
Oh, absolutely. We certainly would not tell the oil companies what they had to do.
Then what would you think they would do with oil they would get here? They'll say,
back to the way we used to do it.
And that would be sell it to the highest bidder.
That's not the way the oil prices and things used to work in this.
It always worked that way. It was sold to
no,
the highest bidder.
They consumed their own.
Well, we consumed most of the oil, but do we have a shortage right now?
No, actually, there's not a shortage of the supply of oil itself. That is true. And just because we're driving less, you know, somebody in India or China, they're going to suck up whatever capacity we don't use. So we can sit here and conserve and conserve and conserve, and that's not going to get us out. The bottom line is, no matter what you want to say, it boils down to it is a supply problem. Because we can sit here and not do a damn thing, and all that's going to happen is it's going to continue to go up and up and up. And while you're sitting here, I haven't heard anybody on your side offering any kind of solutions other than let's go to alternative energies. But what the hell are they doing? What are they doing?
There's no money being poured into it. There's no money being poured into it at all. Have the oil companies that you defend, that I have demonized, have they done anything about alternative energies?
That's not their job,
isn't it?
Because
BP advertises that they're working on alternative energies. How serious are they about it?
I have no idea. They're a British company, aren't they?
Yes.
British Petroleum? Okay. Well, the...
Mike, you know, it doesn't make any difference what country any of these oil companies are from. They're all bastards. They're all money-grubbing bastards who are raping and pillaging the American people for every dime they can possibly get. You know, the people in America try and demonize the Arabs for gouging us for money when the American oil companies are every bit as guilty.
You know what? You sit here and you say that they're the money grubbers and
they're not
basically evil bastards.
They're not.
These are the same people that were selling gasoline and oil for $8 a barrel 20 years ago. And was anybody going, oh, I feel so sorry for these oil companies?
Were they losing money?
Yeah, hell yeah, they were losing money.
Oh,
you know what
please,
to them?
Please, Mike.
They figured out how to take oil.
Please don't tell me the oil companies lost money.
They did lose a lot of money. They did. I think they called it an oil bust.
My listeners on the chat room are asking what you are smoking. You defend the oil companies and you think that they're okay with the prices that they're getting and making, what was it, $43 billion last quarter, something around that neighborhood, and that's okay with you.
75% of their revenue comes offshore. You know that, so don't make it like they're getting all that money from the U.S.
I see. Well, you're turning me around here. I am starting to feel really sorry for them.
Oh, I don't feel sorry for them at all.
I tell you what, if I was the president of the United States, it'd be nationalized next week if I could get away with it.
Well,
for the good of this country.
What industry's next?
Whichever one needs to be. for the good of the country. If the country's gone down the tube, if I'm the president of the United States and this country is going down the tubes, which we are right now, I would nationalize any company vital to the interest of the United States, which the oil companies.
If anyone can come up with an alternative energy supply within the next reasonable amount of time, that's fine. But it ain't out there because it would already exist.
Because we haven't had a president stand up like a man like John F. Kennedy and say, we'll put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. We haven't had a president, we haven't had a leader step up and challenge the people to do that, nor has the government put their might and their weight behind it like Kennedy did behind the space program. We haven't had any leaders to do that, Democrat or Republican.
Well, I'll tell you what, you don't have any leaders on the Democratic side that are offering any solutions other than no. Other than no. No, we can't drill. No, we can't do this. No, we can't do that. And today, your buddy Obama, I guess I don't know how he voted, but the bill passed. I'm assuming he voted for it, the telecom bill.
Yeah. And I don't like it. And
I'm sure you don't.
I'm sure you do. This is a good thing, right?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out someday which side has been right and which side has been wrong.
Yeah.
But the thing is with the bottom line with our economy, we are not going to increase and grow our economy with high energy prices. We're just not going to.
And we're going to get. And I ask you again, we're going to get out of this without higher energy prices. We're going to get them back down again. You really believe that?
Without reasonable energy prices, which is what economic engine runs on, and not just our economic engine, but the world's economic engine, we're not going to experience any type of growth.
How are you going to get the price of the energy down? By drilling?
Drill for more oil.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Well, I think you're in slim company when it comes to that, Mike. I don't think very many people agree with you on that.
No, I mean, it seems like to me some of the folks on your side are kind of warming up to the idea. I saw Dick Durbin came out and said that, well, he could support increased production onshore and offshore.
Increased production for usage, and I can understand somebody saying that, but not to bring the price down. It's not going to bring the price down at all. And they are talking about 8 to 10 years away on a lot of this stuff. It's not going to have any impact on this.
You know what? I want to ask you this. You brought up John Kennedy and said we haven't had a president stand up and do anything like that for energy as they did with the space program. But I ask you, if we can go from zero to putting a man on the moon and returning him back, are you really sitting here trying to tell me that with all the technology that the oil companies have developed over the years that they can't get a well up and running in 10 years? Do you really expect people to believe that?
Show me that they have.
They can do it. They can go right.
Show me that they have. They've admitted they don't even have the equipment to do it. They haven't put their money into more resources and stuff. They've passed it out in profits. They've passed it out in profits. They don't have enough oil. They don't have enough oil drilling ships. They don't have anything what they need. And what they've got is I don't know how many million acres that they haven't drilled on. That now you're saying those
not enough recoverable oil.
Yeah. Well.
To make it profitable, it is.
My, those boys have spent a lot of money on millions and millions and millions and millions of acres. And did you understand that, and how many acres are you claiming how many billion barrels of reserves that we've got here?
Including all of the shale and all of the reserves known, this is not just in the U.S., but in South America with the Petrobras find, you've got other finds in Mexico, and now there's talk of another find in along with the Petrobras that's almost as big or bigger. You're looking at 500 billion barrels.
Doesn't make any difference what you find outside of this country because it's not coming here.
Well, and people talk about Chavez. Nobody else in the world has the ability to really refine the sour crude that you get from Venezuela. So he can sit there and talk a big, big smack game, but there's nobody else to buy his oil except us, really.
Well, he's doing all right with it, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. There's no question of that. No question.
We don't even need to talk about oil production around the world helping us out because it's not going to help us out. It'll make some available if we can afford it. But by then, with India and
With your plan, guy, you want to nationalize the companies. Gas prices will be 50 cents a gallon, but you'll pull up and there won't be any. There just won't be any gas at the pump.
I see, because the government would never be able to run that organization, right?
No. I mean, everybody complains about every agency of the government, including the one I work for. And you know that.
Uh-huh.
You had your own complaint about that same service.
Yeah, I have. But I think the government has proven that they can run certain industries. They've done a good job running the Social Security system.
Well, I think that we can get all off into those things. I'm not going to disagree with you that the government can do some things decent. I will agree with you there that the government.
If it comes down to sink or swim for the good of the country, where the country's going to survive as a first world country, believe me, we'd know how to run an oil business.
Well, let me ask you this: you're talking about it for the good of the country. Can you turn around and say that exact same argument over the telecom bill? If it's for the good of the country, why don't we do it?
Well, how many terrorists are we talking about here that's the huge threat to this country?
Well, it only took 19 to bring down a couple of towers.
Yeah. But, you know, that talk about this terrorism business is ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're sounding like we're facing
because you don't agree with it.
No, they're sounding like we're facing the Nazis or something here, and we're not.
And you know what? That brings up another interesting point. Hitler didn't have any oil. He used coal gasification, and he conquered half the damn world.
Yeah, and the reason he lost the war is because he ran out of oil resources as well. That's the reason he lost.
Because we all cut it off.
That's right. That's why he lost the war. That's why the Japanese lost the war, because they didn't have enough natural resources to carry on, because they couldn't get them anyplace else. And that's going to be the place where we end up. We will not be able to get anyplace else, because we won't be able to afford it. And we're, by then, if we keep up the policies of the Bush administration, nobody in the world will be interested in selling us anything, because they hate us so much.
Well, you know, the whole premise of why they don't want us to drill, you know, and the carbon emissions and all this stuff, all specious. And it's funny how the Chi-Com seem to get it. They've already said, we're not going to abide by any restrictions on our carbon emissions because we don't believe it's causing any problems. And the scientists in India are saying the same thing. You know, we're not going to do it until we reach a certain level and we see that it's having any impact, and we don't see that it's having any impact in our environment. At all.
So we should follow the environmentalists from China and India as to what we should do in this country.
Well, everybody seems to be thinking that the Chinese have some glorious plan. I mean, and that all these other
do you believe they're drilling off the coast of Florida?
They are.
Yeah, you think so?
They absolutely are.
You send me some proof of that, okay?
I can do that for you.
Several Republicans have claimed that, and they've rescinded what they said, because it's absolutely, positively not true. Absolutely,
okay.
Positively not true.
Okay, I'll send you the information.
Yeah, where are you going
to
get that from?
It's up to you to verify.
You going to get that from Sean Hannity, or are you going to get it from people who live in Florida, who explore the waters around Florida and know what's out there?
Do you think that the Chinese vessels that are out there drilling, well, okay, if you want to say it's off of Florida, it's closer to Cuba than it is Florida.
No.
But there's still...
There's no Chinese rigs drilling between here and Cuba. None. Zero. And even even Senator Martinez shot his mouth off about that and then came back and said, well, I goofed. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, thanks for your call.
Good day.
Good to hear from you. Well, Mike obviously has a good stash. Of course, he's not far from the border down there in Houston, so I guess you can round up quite a bit of whatever it needs to get you through the day. And he's smoking the same stuff that most of the Republicans are smoking. You got to understand that. I mean, you know, there is nothing... nothing that you can say to convince some people. Nothing. It's fascinating, actually. Absolutely fascinating. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute or two, so don't go away.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Mark Levine coming up next. Don't miss that show. He's going to have a really good one today. Ties right in with that FISA bill. Talk about snitching. Are you prepared to snitch on your neighbors? I don't know if that's what he's going to talk about for sure, particularly with the neighbors and all, but are you prepared to do that? Think about it. Government comes to you and says, you know, we got this FISA law, and we think your neighbors kind of, you know, and we want to know what you want to know, so we'd like you to keep an eye on them. First there's that, and then they come to you and say, your father, how shall we say this? We think that maybe he's on the wrong side of the law, and we'd like you to keep an eye on him for us, and if you will, we'll make it worth your while, okay? And any other family members or friends, by the way, if you see anything out of the ordinary, be sure and let us know. Here's the number. That's what we're in for. It's exactly what we're in for. And if you think it won't come to that, you're absolutely dead wrong. Dead wrong. 866-546-5254. You still got a minute or two to call. I enjoyed Mike's call. I did. Had a whole lot more to talk about John McCain today, but I don't think I'm going to get to all of it, and I hate to start anything real big right now. I see the bipartisan panel. Finally, somebody has some sense in Washington, D.C. James Baker and Warren Christopher, they conducted a bipartisan study that's recommended that the White House and Congress should have a joint say on what's taken the nation to war. Right now, the president can do it, as Bush proved. Can you imagine? I mean, here's some sanity from a couple of guys, James Baker and Warren Christopher, saying that the 1973 War Powers Act ought to be repealed since it hasn't promoted cooperation between the executive and legislative branches. They're recommending that the president be required to inform lawmakers of any plans to take part in, quote, significant armed conflict or non-secret operations that last longer than a week. Upon being informed by the administration, Congress would have up to 30 days to approve or vote down the president's decision to go to war. Well, some sanity. Some sanity in Washington, D.C. Imagine, if you will, having a hothead like John McCain have the power himself to start a war. Imagine that. How many more wars would we be in if a hothead like him has that power to send us to war and not have to consult Congress? I think this recommendation by Baker and Christopher is excellent. Their recommendation appears to have empowered Capitol Hill, as House and Senate committees will be allowed to review highly classified information in order to determine the president's justification for taking the country to war. I respect both of those men. I don't like all the political things that James Baker has done, but I agree with some of the things he's done. He has a good mind, and I believe Warren Christopher's a good man as well. And if those two came up with this, then I'll put my money on it as well. No president, Democrat, Republican, not the greatest president we've ever had on the Democratic side, but anybody, no president on his own should be able to declare war, or in this case, police action, or whatever you want to call it. And here we are, from an action into a occupation, all on Junior Bush's word. And as we've learned, we can't take his word. His word's worth nothing. It's meaningless. So, hey, it's been an interesting show today. I've enjoyed being with you today. Today's one of those things. There were a lot of things to talk about, and we'll probably talk about the aftermath tomorrow. We're at a little bit of a disadvantage here on the show since the vote was this afternoon on the FISA Act. And I know all the talking heads will be buzzing about it tonight. We will talk a little bit about it tomorrow, but it might be worn out subject by that time. We shall see. We have a guest on tomorrow. We have oh, my gosh. Got the book right here. Rory O'Connor, and he wrote this book, Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio, America's 10 Worst Hate.